This is the cycling podcast coverage of the 2025 Tour de France Femmes, brought to you by Wahoo Fitness. Wahoo's mission is to build the better athlete in all of us. From bike computers to heart rate sensors and smart trainers to ride analytics, they've built an entire ecosystem to help you ride smarter wherever you are in your cycling journey. Now, if you've just started out in cycling or you're relatively new to the sport, you might be wondering what all the fuss is about when it comes to indoor training and what kind of benefits you can get from having a really good structured routine. Well, Wahoo have the trainer for you. The entry-level Kicker Core is smooth, accurate and quiet, and it works with all the most popular apps. It gets the job done without blowing the budget. So if you want to stay fit over winter or build for next season, or you're just a bit short of time and you want to get on with a workout when you've got half an hour or an hour without leaving home, then the Wahoo Kicker Core is for you. It also works with the Zwift, Click and Cog. And for a limited time, until Monday in fact, there are some really attractive savings for listeners in the UK and EU, with up to £700 or €800 available to save across both indoor and outdoor cycling products. Check out wahoofitness.com. Now it's over to Denny and Rose in France.
This is the cycling podcast Femina at the 2025 Tour de France Femmes with Rose Manley and Denny Gray, brought to you in association with Wahoo. Today, we're in Ambert.
Well, what I can say, she was just the best today. I mean, it wasn't like she went and nobody was chasing her. All FDG and all AG was chasing her. And then I only could hear in my ear that, okay, my Vior gap is growing. And I was like, what? It was really, I mean, really, it made me so, so proud. It was amazing day for our team. I mean, like I said, we started in four and we have two riders in top five. So it's pretty nice.
Well, we started tonight's episode with such a lively tribute there, didn't we, from Dominika Vlodacek, singing the praises of a real breakthrough win that we had today on stage six of the Tour de France Femmes from Maeva Squibban. Huge moment for her, Breton rider, French rider. And such a lively explanation of her win there. I mean, I mentioned lively. I mean, that might be the only lively thing. Well, not the only. We're going to be lively, Denny, aren't we?
Of course we are.
We're going to be lively. But
even though we're not in a lively surrounding.
Exactly. So we're not, for once. It's a little bit like being in a library. I feel embarrassed to be talking. It's so quiet. We are actually sitting on a terrace in the middle of the Finnish town of Ambert, and it feels a little bit like those buzzy squares that we found every single night. It feels like there is one of those, and everybody who was out watching the tour, of which there were many, 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 they're all having a party in that square, and we just don't know where that square is.
It does feel like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazingly quiet for what was a very busy finish today. But yeah, I don't know where everybody's gone tonight, but they certainly haven't come here where we're sat. Very, very quiet, just around the corner from an excellent cheese museum, which we'll talk about later.
Oh, yes. I mean, that is, there is, I was wondering a little bit, not to throw too much shade, but it's kind of, we're in the middle of an old town here, aren't we? But it's sort of old and windy without being particularly picturesque or quaint. But it is kind of the centre of gastronomy, isn't it? It is like cheese central, which is obviously puts it in your good books. You're going to say this is the highlight of the week, aren't you? Being in cheese central, surely.
This is definitely up there with some of the best moments, particularly the cheese we had earlier, which we'll talk about later in the show. But it's a sleepy town. It's only got 6,500 residents, but it's in the Auvergne.
Where are those though? Where are they?
We don't know. It's in the Auvergne region, which of course is home to many of the great French cheeses, including Fourme d'Ambert, Celle, Saint Nectaire and Cantal, and the list goes on. Bleu d'Auvergne is the other of the big five. But yes, this is definitely cheese territory now.
That's your kind of safari, isn't it, Denny? You know, they have the big five in Africa, the big animals that you can see on safari. But for you, it's all about spotting cheeses. But it is such a shame to not be, you know, we definitely won't be disturbed by the karaoke band tonight. And last night in the car, we actually got your karaoke song sorted, didn't we? So it seems like a real shame to not.
Well, listeners should know, you were complaining about the singer in the band last night, saying that it sounded like karaoke, only for us to find out later on in the evening that the first half of the show that they put on in the town square was essentially community karaoke, where they had a local band and members of the local population could volunteer to sing in front of hundreds of people. And we're only sorry that we missed out.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to go. They did have, you know, they wrote handwritten posters with all the possible songs that you could have picked on it. I was going to go for "Man, I Feel Like a Woman." I would have killed it, but it's a shame it was over by the time we got there. And you picked some. Just
I was going to bring the whole town down with "Wicked Game" by Chris Isaak.
Well, I mean, you can make up for your hypothetical awful karaoke choice, Denny, by giving us a lively and enthralling tale of the attack. I mean, it was, you know, the stage maybe threw up more questions than it possibly answered today, didn't it? So, take us through what happened.
Absolutely. Well, stage six, of course, the Tour de France Femme was 105 kilometres long. It ran from Clermont-Ferrand to Ambert, where we are now, and it served up a massive central raid and handed France a home victory. The stage rolled out from Place de Jode, which was the scene of the 2023 Grand Départ. Early skirmishes came to nothing before a 20-rider move formed on the Côte de Corpière, with Polka Dot leader Elise Chabet first over the top as riders were already being shelled from the bunch. The break had slimmed down by the time UAE ADQ's Brodie Chapman crested the second climb in first place, while Chabet added two more QOM points. And then on the Col de Bial, the race's first Category 1 test, Chabet again took full points, edging out Silke Smulders. On the descent, Cedrine Cabal and Cassiani Viadoma briefly went clear from the leaders, but everything came back before the final categorised climb, the Col de Chancerre. Chabet was the last escapee caught before Maeva Squibben seized her moment, kicking clear 2.5 kilometres from the top, cresting over a minute ahead. And then at Valcivière, where the bonus seconds were awarded, she grabbed the full 6 seconds bonus. Kim Lecourt in the yellow jersey took four, and Cassiani Viadoma took two. Juliette Labousse countered from the favourites group, but Squibben's gap never dropped below a minute. She hit Ambert alone, arms aloft, to take the second French stage win in Tour Femme history. Labousse held on for second, while Lecourt led the leaders home for another four bonus seconds. Damy Vollering and Dominika Wadacik completed the top five. Lecourt now leads by 26 seconds over Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, thanks to her time bonuses. Nivia Doma moves up to third, thanks to hers. She's at 30 seconds, and Vollering is down to fourth at 31. And then no change again in the rest of the jerseys. Vibus and Chabet retain green and polka dots, while Julie Bego keeps white.
I could take issue with you there, Denny, because you said second French Tour de France stage win, didn't you? Could easily just say the second Breton stage win. All of the stage wins in this rebooted Tour de France Femme that have gone to a French woman have gone to actually a Breton woman. So, you know, depends where
you have me really worried then that completely, completely mucked up a very basic fact.
You didn't. You never do. You never do, Denny. But yeah, I mean, what is so wonderful about this win for Maeva Squibben, you know, UAE team ADQ have really been trying all week. Of course, they had that big Grand Départ in Brittany. We actually heard, didn't we, from Maeva Squibben in our Breton mini feature that went out in our last regular episode before the Tour de France Femme kicked off. You know, we heard from her about how proud she is of being Breton from Brittany, that, you know, Bernard Hinault is such a looms large there, that kind of tough, gritty character, you know, and you know, it was, she showed all of that, didn't she, today, pushing on, not being like, you know, horribly aggressive, it should be said, but, but you know, aggressive on the bike for sure, and, you know, being determined, having a huge amount of grit and commitment, and, you know, seeing an opportunity at the perfect time also.
Yeah, I mean, it was a perfectly timed attack, wasn't it? Because there was a lull in the leaders group. She went clear. No one tried to chase. Everyone kind of looked around and she took full advantage. And yeah, she was so strong, although on the attack, it wasn't just to do with the hesitancy behind, because Demi Vollering and the FDJ Suez team were pulling very hard for bonus, ahead of the bonus seconds climb. She did have a work cut out, but she executed it brilliantly. And it was a great time to go because she was only 2.5 kilometres from the final categorised climb. There was that short climb for the bonus seconds, but she really nailed the descents. And once she was over that last climb, she was probably never in doubt that she would take the win because she was descending so well.
Well, you never doubted, actually, Denny. You called it very, very quickly as soon as she went off, just to give you...
Thank you, Rose. Thank you.
Yeah. but she's... I mean, it's also just fun. It is fantastic to be at the Tour de France and have a French win. It is, and, you know, also for her to do it in such style and to be G'ing up the crowd and, you know, having the time to give it some beans or give it some cheese in the celebration. Give it some brie. Giving it some brie. Could that be better than beans? I don't know. But yeah, you know, really getting the crowd excited and, I mean, having those moments is so special. Obviously, it's fantastic when we have these breakthrough wins, but when they can make it a really special, memorable moment, that's even better. I mean, we thought last year her second place, actually, into Le Grand Bornon was special. You know, let's not forget, that was a mighty solo move then as well.
Yeah, that was a big moment for her, wasn't it? And I think it was, we spoke to Sherry Pridham after the race, and that was one of the reasons why UAE ADQ took her on this year, because they knew she had a lot of talent. Still only 23, and actually the amazing thing is that it's only still her only third pro win, but she seems to be do so well at the Tour de France Femme after a second last year and her win today. And it's a real reversal in fortunes for what is a very young rider still, but she broke her sacrum in 2022 riding the Tour Femme. So to come back so strongly, she only turned professional fully last year, is brilliant. And yeah, you'd expect that there's still lots to come from such a young rider, but yeah, what a great moment. And a great moment for the team, who of course have been rocked, haven't they, by Elisa Longo Borghini leaving the race early. They're down to four riders.
Crazy.
And they had a strong race, didn't they, because they had Brodie Chapman in the break all day winning one of the QOMs. Then they had Mava Squibben winning the stage, but then Dominika Wodicic finished fifth on the stage, which is an excellent performance as well from the pole. So all round a great team performance for just four riders.
Well, should we hear from Dominika Wodicic? We heard her right at the top, but I mean, we haven't actually heard from her before on the podcast, and she's a fantastic interview. So much insight, so, you know, lively and emotional. So let's hear a bit more from her.
Well, you know, they always said that after downs, it has to be some ups. And to be honest, since the very beginning of this tour, I really felt like we had only downs, because, well, on second stage, Elisa was out, then Gaspar was out, yesterday Caroline was out. It wasn't their fault, it's a virus. To be honest, well, inside the team we also didn't feel really, really good. But well, today we started in four riders, so, and I can tell you that in a bunch, like here, during race, during stages in Tour de France, it's hectic, nervous, and even if you have seven riders in the team, it's hard to stay in the front to be safe. And today, we started in four riders and everybody did amazing job. Lara was with us with the bottles till she could. Then Brody was in the front since the very, very beginning. So me and Maeva, we could stay easy in the bunch, in the peloton.
How do you stay motivated though when something bad like that happens? What's the vibe in the team? How do you keep it high?
Good question. We have Brody, and I think I think this is the answer. She's always smiling. Not only her, Maeva, Lara. We really were trying to keep the motivation high, keep vibes high. I mean, it's never easy because then, you know, you wake up, you go to the breakfast, and then you hear from your team doctor that another girl is out. So it was always like, oh, again. And, well, we really were hoping that we are working for something and maybe one day we can achieve this. And I guess we achieved it today. And I'm so surprised by myself that, well, really, it's even hard to describe.
And have you learned anything? You're riding with the best at the moment. What can you learn from watching kind of the big GC contenders? Have you picked up anything about their form?
There's one thing that I need to stay downhill in the first five, in top five riders, because then I can lose contact a bit, and not maybe because of lack of my skills, but because of lack of riders in front of me. So this is, I think, the biggest difference. And yeah, I think it is.
So you're saying that the descents could be important in terms of the rest of the race?
To be honest, today, the biggest fight for me was on descent.
Well, Dominika Vladacek, they're also raising a few interesting kind of bit of insight there that we are going to come back to about descending and, you know, the fact that you've got to stay near the front and how important that might be, because we kind of heard that from a few sources today, and we have got some really key descents coming up, particularly tomorrow. But we will return to that a little later, because it is time, of course, for Busy Bozzy, Bosness as usual, any other Bosness. You can choose whichever one you like the most. That is, of course, our opportunity for our listeners to pose questions to Ian Boswell, and that's all thanks to our title sponsor for the Tour de France Femme, Wahoo. Well, what have we got today? We've got a question that's coming all the way from Hawaii, would you believe it, from Will Whitmore. Will says, Ian was nice enough to send a message to our foster son, who we adopted, when he rode over 200 miles as a 9-year-old during the pandemic. That, I mean, huge kudos to your son, Will. That, I mean, incredible. I hope Ian Boswell said just the same. I'm sure he did. But this is a great question, a question that we're going to really like. What region of France did you enjoy most on the tour? I'm curious to know, Ian. Tell us.
Hi, Will. It's great to hear from you again. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine out in Hawaii. I had the opportunity to live in France for 8 years, traveled around a fair bit. I was based down on the Côte d'Azur in Nice, which is a beautiful, warm area to ride a bike. A lot of pro cyclists live in and around there. While I love the Côte d'Azur, it can get busy in the summertime. And I had the chance to do some riding a few years back while with the cycling podcast around Clermont-Ferrand. This is also the location of the start of today's stage. It is a beautiful area, one of the areas that I would love to get back to and do some more riding. It's a little bit more rural than a lot of parts of France, being on the edge of the Massif Central, which for a cyclist is just what you're looking for. The Puys, the little volcanoes that pop up all around the city, are stunning. So if you get a chance to head over to France, be sure to check out the Massif Central region, and in particular, the city of Clermont-Ferrand.
Well, there you go, Denny. Clermont-Ferrand. I fear that, you know, Ian will have sent huge amounts of tour groups, maybe coming all the way from Hawaii to Clermont-Ferrand, and I don't want to say they're going to be disappointed. It wouldn't be necessarily top of my list. We spent some lovely days actually in Clermont-Ferrand, didn't we? Where the Grand Départ was a couple of years ago for the Tour de France. Fam, that was your first. That was our first proper meeting.
It was my
really.
Debut. Yeah.
Yeah.
You took me on under your wing. Yeah. Then you hardly knew me. Worried I might be a psychopath.
The
jury's still out on that one, isn't it?
I'm just doing the psychological profiling of you. It's a long-term project, actually. We had a night. We stayed in the old town. We had a lovely time there. But I have been to Clermont-Ferrand before, and I think there's like lots of kind of outsidey bits which are less sort of interesting, but it's all kind of surrounded by these beautiful rural, these lovely hills that we saw the rides going on today. But you know what we like to see in a place is the food and drink, don't we, Denny? That's what we're looking for when we're looking for our best bits of France, is did we have a good drink? Did we have a good meal?
Not just
meal?
Any food, of course.
Not just any food for us, no.
It's a particular food group we're particularly interested in.
We are. I do actually want at some point for us to draw a little sort of Venn diagram, or like, you know, little pyramid of your kind of food groups, Debbie. Because it's like, you know, cheesecake, I guess that counts. Any other cheese derivative that you might be interested in, but we're going to have to kind of work that out, aren't we?
Yeah, and probably cheese accompaniments, bread is the obvious one, isn't it?
But yeah, you got to have wine.
Wine.
Yeah.
All the basics, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't live on anything else, cheese, bread and wine, they're the essentials.
Well, that is what the phrase should be, isn't it? No man can live on bread alone, but can live on bread, cheese and wine.
Yes.
That would be how you would kind of, you know,
yeah, if you want a fully rounded diet.
Yeah, that's what you need. Well, you know, we didn't have the bread, actually. We had the cheese and wine for sure today. You were, of course, very keen, Denny, to get us to this town with a cheese that is named after it. So let's hear how we got on at the museum today. Okay, well, Denny, we've arrived at the stage finish. And you're excited about this stage finish, not just because of the amazing racing, I'm sure is happening right now as we speak, but because this is like home of a very famous cheese, a cheese that I've forgotten the name of. I have like cheese deafness, don't I? We've learned that. I can never.
The House of Form d'Ambert,
okay.
Which is a famous blue cheese. It's got protected AOC status here in France, so protected by law, by the way it's made. But yes, we're in a museum dedicated to the lovely cheese that
we had this, actually, didn't we, at La Fromagerie in London when we did our preview episode. I think this was the one that I really liked. Is
you
that
did
right?
Enjoy it, yeah, and we're going to have a tasting a bit later, but first we're going to go on a little tour of the museum, aren't we?
We have, yeah, we have actually already, we were trying to gem up, weren't we, watching the welcome video.
Well, this room is dedicated to giving you an insight into the jasserie, which is the French word. I think we've pronounced it correctly, but we may have got it completely wrong. But where the cheese used to be made up the mountains away from the wheat fields. It's very much women's work, wasn't it, Rose, here, for in the olden times at least, where the women would kind of stay up the mountain alongside the cows making the cheese while the men kind of tended to the wheat fields.
But when we say living alongside, they literally shared their little home. With, you know, these tiny, like, little two-room homes, and one room's got all the cows in, and the other room's got the all the women doing everything else, sleeping, eating, cooking, or making cheese, all of it, in this other little farmhouse room.
Should we move on to the next room?
Let's move on. Let's see what we've got. We've got a... Well, there's a cow in here. Looks like you can have a go at milking. That seems like something for us. Something with my name
excited.
On.
I think you should go first.
Let's go and have a go. Okay. The cow is called Myrtle. She's not a real cow, by the way, listeners. That would be really... that would be very ambitious of me. Here we are, Denny. You've got the udders.
How often have you milked a cow in the past?
I'm quite good. Oh, no, Denny, I'm quite good at this, aren't I? Another talent to put down. To be honest, Denny, it's a bit drippy. So we've got these rubber udders here. They're quite hard work. Not like you might expect. But I'm getting a good, decent amount of milk there.
Yeah, I think you're a natural, Rose.
Well, to be honest, if I'm going to be totally honest, Denny, this might be oversharing, but I, you know, have been having to pump my breast milk every night anyway. So this, to be honest, doesn't feel too dissimilar to every single morning and night that I have had while I've been away from my baby here at the Tour de France fam. But look, I'm doing very well. I don't know about... Do you want to give that a go?
I'll give it a go too, yes.
Okay, Myrtle. It might not be such a gentle touch, I don't know. How are you liking that, Denny? I'm going to be honest. Yeah. You're not getting much out there.
It's kind of... Oh, no, that's the way to do it.
Just
squeeze. Squeeze and drop.
That was actually hard work, Denny. I'm sure you'll agree, the old cow milking. So maybe we should repay ourselves with actually eating a bit of I haven't actually seen any of this actual cheese yet in this museum, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I can't wait. I've been looking forward to this all day.
You have pomme d'Anvers, 100 hectares, Cantal entre deux, pomme d'Anvers with gingerbread, 100 hectares with blueberry jelly, I think,
yeah.
And Cantal with an apricot.
Wow, okay, great.
And for the drink, you have the choice between blueberry syrup or red wine. What do you want?
Red wine, please.
Okay.
Predictable.
I'm trying to not say that in the most enthusiastic way possible.
I have to say, this is brilliant value. We've €3.80 for a plate of three cheeses and a glass of red wine.
Particularly when the Cycling Podcast are paying, isn't it? It's even better value.
Yes, yes. Well, when you look at it like that. But hopefully we're giving something back to the listeners here. Should we tuck in, Rose?
Yes.
So this is the Forme d'Anvers. You'll see that it's got kind of blue craters almost inside it. And that's because the Penicillium roqueforti, which is the bacteria that's used to create the blue cheese, is created through the piercing of needles through the cheese. So rather unlike Stilton, which is a famous blue cheese in England, which is got full of veins, this is kind of more pockmarked blue. Our red wine's coming.
We did see the device they used that for that, didn't they? Like a torture method thing.
Yes.
Huge, big press with nails sticking out.
There you go.
Merci.
Thank you very much.
Well, cheers.
Well, cheers.
Okay, let's go
for it. So they've paired it with some gingerbread. That is a cracking combination.
Mm.
What do you think?
I think I went too much too much of
gingerbread.
The cake.
Yeah. Very soft, very creamy blue cheese. It's not got the strength of a Stilton or a Roquefort.
So which is weird because it looks like it's going to be so much stronger because it's much more... Yeah, obviously you said about the pock marks, but also like, you know, the sections that are... Moldy. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, it is from.
But like the grain mold, they're much larger kind of patches, almost like big paint splashes.
Yes.
So I was expecting it to be. I was bracing myself, Denny. I'll be honest, because you know you're more of a fan of the strong cheeses than me. But this is really delicious.
This is very Moorish. It's quite a subtle blue cheese. If you're not a big fan of blue cheese, I'd recommend you try this because this would be a good one to start with.
I am really enjoying this, Denny, but, you know, our tastes are a little different. So I just wonder, you know, where does this rank? Is this up? This is up there?
This is easily at the top. This is absolutely mind-blowingly nice. I could probably eat 10 times more and be a very happy, probably slightly bloated person.
You should have been born back in the 19th century when they were living up in the hill and just doing this all day. You imagine how happy you would have been.
It's a good combination. You'd work up an appetite all day, wouldn't you? And then you can just gorge on Forme d'Anvers afterwards. But yeah, absolutely delicious. I'm also looking forward to trying the other two cheeses, so I'm sure they'll get very good marks as well. But for now, that's by far and beyond the best cheese we've tasted.
It is, isn't it? And but we do. I can actually hear sirens and cars going through the finish line, which means that, you know, as a good reminder that there is a race going on, we should probably get back to it, but not before we've enjoyed our lovely little shady spot and all our lovely cheese.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do.
They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Well, that is a big moment for you, Denny, I think. We're kind of a bit more in, we are properly in cheese country now, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, I had no doubt that the cheese would be top notch today, and we weren't disappointed, were we? It was excellent cheese.
It was.
We also bought some Seller on the way out and had that for lunch.
So yes.
We've hit all the notes today, haven't we?
Yeah, Seller is a bit
of a
different one.
We've hit four of the big five in one day.
We've done four of them. Blimey. Yeah, we did three on the... We had a plate of three cheeses, yeah. And then... what's the other one?
Blue d'Auvergne.
Is that for tomorrow?
Which is a stronger blue cheese. I think we're moving out of the Auvergne region, so I'm not sure we're going to get that. But who knows? If there's an opportunity, we've got to take it. Like, a bit like Maeve Squibban today. You know?
Yeah.
You've got to pick your moment and go for it if there's an opportunity.
Well, I don't know. I feel like we're a little bit less like Maeve Squibban and we're a bit more like Elise Chabet was today, where we're just kind of very upfront, very directly charging towards the cheese at all opportunities. Let's talk a little bit about Elise Chabet because, you know, it was a surprise to see... It was a surprise and it wasn't because she is the polka dot jersey wearer. Obviously, she has to respect that. She's been clearly, over the first few stages, going directly for those points. But she's also a kind of key teammate for Demi Vollering and in her campaign for the yellow jersey. So it was a bit surprising to see her in the break, for one, and then to be really driving the break on. I mean, in the footage that we saw, I mean, she was seemed to always be at the front of that break, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a real surprise, and it really had us scratching our heads, didn't it, all day. What was going on inside the FDJ-Suez team? Surely a rider who's clearly in very good form in Elise Chabet. She was riding high on GC before today. She was actually in the virtual yellow on the road today. But we were thinking, surely, with the mountains now here and some really, really tough stages coming up in the final three stages, she should be keeping her powder dry because she'll be a really important lieutenant for Demi Vollering. But nonetheless, she was up the road driving things along, and we couldn't quite work out why. You know, was it because Demi Vollering isn't as strong, hasn't recovered as much as people thought she might have, so therefore Elise Chabet was getting a consolation prize in the QOM jersey? Was it because she was going against team orders? Was there some other grand plan among the FDJ Suez team? And I don't think anyone could really work out why she was there and why she was driving things so hard.
No, it was so strange because I did think maybe it's a little bit of a cover for Demi Vollering, but then obviously she came in at the finish line sprinting very close, very narrowly, actually missing out on third place where she would have got some bonus seconds and finishing fourth. So she's clearly should be feeling fine. It also meant, of course, that the breakaway weren't allowed any time to get away because everyone wanted to keep them in check because she's so close up on GC. And you would have thought maybe letting a breakaway go like that, where, you know, if Elise Chabet wasn't in it, then no one would have really been going to be a threat to the GC. Surely that would have been a rest for all the GC, right? Demi Vollering would have definitely got... been a bit relaxed on that because you wouldn't have to be kind of following in the wheels of all these other teams who are still after the win, stage win.
Yeah, it did mean that, of course, AG Insurance Soudal had to be vigilant. They didn't want to lose the yellow jersey. Elise Chabet is not a rider you would want to let up the road with a few minutes because you never know what might happen if that happens. And it meant... I imagine some of the other breakaways were quite irked by having her there because they'd lost maybe one of the last opportunities to get a breakaway win. Being there with Elise Chabet meant that you were effectively, or your break was effectively doomed. So it must have been frustrating to be riding alongside her, I guess, unless you're Brody Chapman, of course, because what you were doing is just softening up the bunch ready for a Maeve Esquibun attack. But yeah, it was a curious decision to let her go up the road, and it left us wondering why.
Yeah. Well, also, I should say, I mean, we are going to hear from the DS, Lars Boom, about, you know, what he was thinking. But there was also not just Elise Chabet that went off, that was in the front all day, but also they sent Juliette Labousse off in pursuit of Maeve Esquibun when it kind of already looked like you've not got a chance of catching her. So what is Juliette Labousse doing? And that was exactly the question that was asked to Lars Boom. So let's hear what he had to say.
More or less, nowadays you see a lot of attacks also in the downhill. That's sometimes dangerous, and sometimes you, if RK can control a bit behind and do a good downhill, that's sometimes easier than some crazy girls doing a crazy downhill, and it creates a little bit more rest in the downhills. I think Juliette was just reacting and just jumping.
Thanks, can I ask a question about Elise Chabet? Thinking behind having her out front doing a lot of work today?
No, if you see, if that group goes without Chabet, then maybe they get 5, 10, 20 minutes, or not 20, but at least 5, 10 minutes, and the breakaway is gone, and now the pressure was on, I think, all day. Creating also fatigue for the whole peloton, I think, and a high tempo, and it was for sure not an easy day, and I think it suits us going into the Alps to have a bit more fatigue in the peloton.
There's no worry about conserving energy of, you know, Demi's best domestiques?
I think everybody's doing well, and I'm really confident about Evita and Juliette, so no doubt about them.
Well, it just gets a little bit more curious, doesn't it, Denny? It was one of those things where, you know, all the press are kind of standing around asking our questions, and, you know, you can see everyone's faces thinking, you know, I know that's what he's saying, but that doesn't seem to, that still doesn't make any sense. And, you know, FDJ, when they do their press moments, I like to keep them very tight, and then, right, that's it, everyone off. You know, they don't really give you the chance to keep probing on these things. But yeah, kind of a bit odd on two points, wasn't it? You know, you would think, well, I mean, you would think both of them are great domestiques, Elise Chabet and Juliette Labousse. Obviously, Juliette Labousse is expected to be more useful in the big mountains, but Elise Chabet, you know, can climb very well. She's very good at hilly terrain, very good in the run into mountains. You would think you'd be wanting to conserve energy there, and not be using energy, because now there aren't any quiet days now. It's all mountains now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we had got any more clarity, did we, there from Lars Boom. I didn't really understand why having Juliette Labousse out front would help on the descents. Maybe only because, maybe was the thinking there that she could help slow down any riders that kind of got free. Of course, the climb before, we saw Cassian Evi-Domer and Cedrine Cabal going free on the descent. Maybe the thinking was, if Labousse was up there, she could just maybe kind of interfere a little bit with any kind of a breakaway attempt, or at least sit on and kind of disrupt any escape. But that's the only thing I could, only reason I think that might help. But
it's a huge amount of effort.
It's not a tactic
that,
I've ever seen used before in cycling. So yeah, it was a curious one. I mean, the descents themselves are going to be, or could potentially be, quite important. I think, as you intimated earlier, Rose, talking to Dominika Wodacek earlier, the fact that she noticed that actually the descents were a place she wanted to be at the front, because gaps were occurring, and if you didn't get yourself at the front, you might get caught behind a gap, suggests that she thinks, and maybe other GC riders think, that there's an opportunity there. And tomorrow's stage finishes with a descent from the Col de Granier, which is quite a long descent, so that should be, or could be, a place where GC rivals might take some time, which would be, it's quite interesting, isn't it? We saw Elisa Longo Borghini go on the attack in the Giro, take advantage on the descent. We saw Marlon Reusser do it earlier in the season.
We saw Anna van der Breggen take a stage win at the Vuelta in that way, in a descent into the finish.
So, you know, yeah, and riders like Nivea Domon and Cabal are such brilliant descenders. They showed that today. They were clearly
And they love to do it, don't they?
They love to do it. And you know, Nevia Domas took risks, I think, I can't remember what stage it was now, there's another descent, maybe stage two, where she was taking risks on the descent. So, yeah, who knows? We could see some fireworks, not just on the climbs tomorrow, but on that final descent too.
And we do have that sense that Kasia Nevia Doma particularly is a rider who is keen to look for all of those kind of bonus seconds. It's interesting. So we have these bonus sprints that are actually all, they're not, when they say sprints, they're not the flat intermediate sprints. They're kind of on slight inclines. But we're constantly seeing the same GC contenders that are going for those. We always see Kasia Nevia Doma up there, don't we? We always see Kim LeCourt, of course. I mean, she's mopped up absolutely loads of seconds doing that. But it's interesting that, you know, we don't see Anna van der Breggen, say, contending for that. So I'm wondering if some riders are thinking, if I can get a bit of a buffer, it sets me up better for the mountains, while other riders are thinking, you know, those mountains are big and it doesn't really matter what these little tiny increments that you're making now, it won't matter, so I'd rather conserve my energy. It's interesting how we're kind of constantly seeing that split between quite a small group of elite riders.
Yeah, and Kim LeCourt is becoming the queen of mopping up the bonus seconds, isn't she? 34 bonus seconds now.
I don't think that's going to be, she's going to be, that we can rename. I mean, I think Queen of the Mountains is a good name for a jersey. I think Queen of Mopping Up the Bonus Sprint Seconds.
No, I'm not
seconds,
trying to be that character from Mean Girls.
trying to make it happen.
With that one, no. But it's just impressive just how much time she's managed to mop up. Every stage almost, she's picking up bonus seconds, and that's, you know, a big part of her 26-second lead over Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. So, you know, she's proving now that, you know, by being the strongest at those smaller climbs, by being such a good finisher, she's almost taking the kind of what we thought might be the Lotte Kopecky role this year. We thought Lotte Kopecky would be this archetypal rider that could pick up stage wins, could win on punchy bonus sprints, and be in a position where she could have a buffer going into stage eight, where everyone thinks, you know, the Col de Madeleine is going to make such a big difference. But if LeCourt can pick up even more tomorrow, and who's to say she can't or won't?
And if you can follow wheels because you're the Aero Jersey, and you
then
don't have
she's
to
going to build attack. A nice, yeah, nice buffer, and she could afford to lose 30 seconds on that climb. So that this is, yeah, all power to LeCourt for doing that. And yeah, who knows? Who knows? This might all be academic. We keep talking
this
about.
This is what we have to say about everything we say, though.
Yeah. Well, we keep. I mean, you know. Yeah. It could be decided by minutes, but let's hope not. We want another close finish like we did last year, don't we?
We do. We should say that it seems like, you know, the party is starting to find us here. Just seeing people taking paraphernalia that they've obviously taken from signage, Tour de France signage and flags, and going past. But now, oh, it's gone back to being very quiet back on the terrace again. We've talked a lot about the front of the race, of course, but it was a little bit of a nervy moment, wasn't it? At the Fenix de Koenig bus, we were waiting for Flora Perkins, should say cycling podcast favourite, Flora Perkins. We were with her dad, Richard. He was obviously very concerned about whether, you know, she was going to make the time cut. We're glad to say she actually made it quite comfortably in the end. It's one of those things where out on the road, once the race is done, you stop getting this kind of information about how everyone else is doing out on the road, and if you've got an interest in one of those riders, then it can be a bit of a worrying time. But yes, she came back full of smiles, although she did say she was feeling a bit sad, admitted, but full of smiles anyway. And let's hear what she said.
Well, Flora, we, you know, lots of people looking at the front of the race, but we were all watching the back of the race.
Right at the back.
how was that, being at the back?
A slightly new experience, I have to say. It is a little bit stressful, just trying to do the maths in your head and thinking, okay, how much time do we have? Are we going to be okay? It didn't go how I wanted it today. I got dropped like a way before I thought I might. It's just a bit less fun. I tried not to overthink it. I think sometimes you just have a bad day. I think it's important to stay positive for the team. Like, you don't want someone on the bus that's like all really sad because I made the time cut. I'm here still tomorrow. So yeah, I had a long time to think about it, and tomorrow's a new day. Yeah, I'd like to say I saved, but actually when you're trying to make time cut, you're also pushing on a little bit, so you're doing kind of threshold on the climbs, so I'm not sure how much easier it is. I think it's better to just stay in the race if you can.
Does it feel like a great lesson in stage racing at this kind of level for you?
I'd like to say I learned stuff from it, but I'm not sure that I did yet. Maybe with more reflection. It was all right. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay. And how are you motivating yourself? Or are you, you know, what is it like in the group? Are people chatting to each other, or was it all just...
Some group editors are more chatty than others. It wasn't really that chatty today. There's a bit of chat. Said hi to a few people. All the Irish girls, I don't know if you've seen them, are wearing scrunchies that one of their sisters has made. So I talked about that for a little bit. Shout out to their vintage website. Yeah. I don't know her name. Mangan? Or
yeah,
something?
Fiona Mangan.
Yeah, her sister makes scrunchies, so get on that, is what I'd say.
I love gossip.
Yeah.
The gruppetto is obviously where you need to go to if you want your hair scrunchies. If you want some intel on hair scrunchies, it's clear the gruppetto is the place to go. But it is kind of indicative, isn't it, about how hard this race is, because we're now on day 6. We've still got another 3, really the harder stages to come. The riders are already at maximum. I mean, it is kind of that thing where in the men's Tour de France they have sort of days where it's definitely for the sprinters and everyone else is a bit calmer, but you kind of never have that actually on a 9-day race, which makes it thrilling, makes it great to watch every day. It's got, every day is almost like a classic, isn't it, which is what the men's Tour de France are now aspiring to. But yeah, just it kind of shows you there's also a lot of illness around in the peloton at the moment. We've seen a lot of riders leaving because of that, but it shows you how hard it is, and actually there are so many factors and changing factors in this race that are still to play.
Yeah, everybody keeps saying how tough this race has been for the riders so far, and I think it's not just the physical demands on the riders. Of course the racing has been very, very intense, but also for most riders this is just a new level of intensity off the bike as well, with lots more media pressure, lots more pressure they're putting on themselves because they want to perform on the bigger stage. Of course this stage, or this race, is 9 stages this year, which is a stage longer, so there's lots of different things combining, I think, to make it a really hard race for many riders. And you know, a rider like Flora Perkins, very, very talented young rider, but this is her first Tour de France Femme, as it will be for many riders out there. And it's so much to take in, isn't it? So much to deal with. And with 3 very heavy stages coming up, I think there will be lots of riders keeping their fingers crossed that they can make the time cut on some of these harder stages. And because just finishing this race is a big achievement, isn't it, in itself? So yeah, we'll be keeping our fingers crossed, won't we, for Flora and for other riders. But it's such a tough race. Her dad was very worried for her, wasn't he? And I'm sure that goes the same for lots of families and friends of riders throughout the race.
Well, I mean, we talk about Richard Perkins, Flora's dad, and he gave us an absolute gold stat fact, which you didn't use in your
intro.
I can't believe you didn't use it in your intro.
I keep meaning to come back to that, but yeah.
I'll let you have the
glory of Richard's.
Well, I've given him the credit now. You're okay, yeah.
No, absolutely. But yeah, thank you, Richard. He kind of rode back while we were on the terrace here to find some food and bumped into us and had seen the sign for the town of Amber and noticed that it was twinned with Gorgonzola, the famous Italian blue cheese. So this is like, well, it is a match made in heaven, isn't it? For any blue cheese connoisseurs out there.
I would love to see like an Anchorman style battle between Gorgonzola and Form d'Ambert. Who do you think would win? Who would win in your book?
I think I would go for Form d'Ambert. It's a bit less punchy than the Gorgonzola.
In a fight you want punches, Denny. I'm going to just tell you that.
Well, okay. I mean, it's subtle.
In your heart, it won the battle of your heart.
Maybe
didn't it
will win by, you know, by stealth.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there are some, I mean, I love blue cheese. There are some really top, I mean, you'd have to be a bigger contest. You know, there has to be several rounds. You couldn't just put those two in a fight. You'd have to have a whole Olympics just of blue cheeses, I think.
Gosh, this is becoming. You're going to be quitting the Tour de France fam, aren't you? If a blue cheese Olympics comes up for sure.
Well, you did say to me while we were sitting out, enjoying our plate of cheese and a glass of red wine, we were completely oblivious to what was happening in the race at the time.
Yes.
You said to me, imagine if the race had been cancelled while we weren't paying attention. And I did intimate that I wouldn't mind.
You said that would be great.
I'd happily spend the rest of the day just eating cheese. But, you know, it's cheese and cycling is a great combination.
Well, sorry, I have to break it to you, Denny. There is another stage tomorrow.
Oh. Another stage means another town, another place to find cheese.
Well, I look forward to the stage tomorrow. I look forward to finding what cheese you have earmarked for tomorrow, Denny. But we should get some grub in, as always. We had a curry, didn't we, two nights ago? The world's
you
mildest.
You were very unhappy about. Well, not the dish we had, but
no.
Some of the menu you were
no,
unhappy about.
No, I was just a bit shocked that it was a Punjabi restaurant, apparently, and it had beef curry on the menu, which for me, I told you, Denny, didn't I? The family WhatsApp blew up when I took a picture of the menu. There, you know, these sacred animals being chopped up into curry. That's no good. But, and then we had a Mexican taco, didn't we? Which was neither Mexican nor a taco yesterday when we were at our street party. So we have to go for something super cheesy tonight. Super French, super cheesy.
Well, the way it's going, we're not being served here because they've closed the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, let's hope we find some food. Otherwise, we'll be back to the vending machine pizza.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that good memories, though. Good memories.
Oh, happy times.
All right. Well, let's leave it there then. We really must shove off. Thank you very much, Denny.
Thank you, Rose.
And thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.